Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us. You're in Room 2C, which is Pricing Fairly, Funding Personally, LSA's Strategy for Sustainable and Individualised Attendant Care. Before we start, I'll remind you that you can put questions through the app that will come up and I can ask them on your behalf, or at the end you're welcome to stand up to the microphone. I'll introduce our two presenters today, both from the Lifetime Support Authority. Sharon is a senior manager at LSA and oversees service planning and provider management. She's an experienced occupational therapist, passionate about delivering person-centred care. And Harris is a legally trained procurement specialist with an economics background, very qualified, and he has developed LSA's attendant care cost model. And they're going to talk to us today. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Harris Asimakopoulos, and I'm Senior Procurement Advisor at the LSA, and I work under the Corporate Directorate.
And I'm Sharon Cates. I'm the Senior Manager of Primary Support at the LSA, and I work in the Services Directorate. So before we begin, I'd like to pay... my deepest respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as the traditional custodians of the land that we know as Australia. We recognise their continuous connection to land, water and culture. We pay our respect to elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge the long history of knowledge exchange through stories and traditions and commit to fostering a culture of learning from and working with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the spirit of reconciliation.
Thank you, Sharon. So, as injury and disability support schemes contend with increasing pressures to maintain financial sustainability while responding to the individualised needs of participants, the importance of an evidence-based and person-centred pricing framework has become increasingly clear. This presentation will outline the LSA's approach to attendant care pricing, an approach that extends well beyond publishing hourly rates. We will introduce the LSA's pricing and funding approach as a transparent and adaptable methodology that supports the authority's commitment to outcome-driven, person-centred care. We'll demonstrate what strategies support person-centred care for participants is and describe how this pricing model enables an individualised and sustainable approach to delivery of quality care. We'll outline how this framework differentiates from the NDIA's approach to pricing, focusing instead on a more responsive and collaborative approach. The presentation will also describe how the LSA has adapted the NDIA's disability worker cost model to suit the unique context of our scheme, supporting the development of our own rates while maintaining alignment to real-world cost of delivery, service delivery. This work does have broader relevance, particularly for other schemes such as workers' compensation or compulsory third party, which, like the LSA, are comparatively smaller purchases of care in the market. In this context, the focus on person-centred care, provider engagement and pricing strategy are particularly crucial, and many of the lessons we have learnt may be directly applicable. And finally, we will demonstrate how the LSA's approach to provider pricing as part of a wider stakeholder management strategy, demonstrating that thoughtful pricing design can also serve as a tool to build stronger, more collaborative relationships with our providers, ultimately enhancing the outcomes for our participants. We look forward to sharing our insights and any discussions that are to follow.
So I'm going to start with the background about the LSA. The LSA was established in 2014 to administer the Lifetime Support Scheme, a no-fault scheme to provide treatment, care and support for people seriously injured in motor vehicle accidents in South Australia. The eligible injury types for the Lifetime Support Scheme are brain injury, spinal cord injury, amputations, burns and blindness. The LSA's vision is clear. It's to make a difference in the lives of the participants who are at the centre of what we do. And we do this by planning and funding person-centred treatment, care and support to make a positive difference to recovery and independence. We're committed to this person-centred care where participants are at the centre of their own care and can access the right supports in a way that respects their goals, preferences and individual needs. Participants have a voice in their care, choice and control over providers and are partners in planning treatment, care and support. The LSA works with providers to ensure that treatment, care and support is high quality, coordinated and supports positive outcomes. The LSA is also committed to financial sustainability to ensure support for participants now and for decades into the future. And we will discuss how person-centred care underpins both the quality service provision and the scheme's sustainability. So just a summary of who the LSS participants are. The scheme has grown from its first participant in 2014 to over 400 participants in 2025. Participants' numbers are predicted to increase by about 50 new participants per year, with the long-term forecast of reaching a peak of 1,200 to 1,300 at maturity. Approximately 75% are male, 70% have sustained a serious brain injury, with the remaining 30% almost evenly divided between people with amputations and spinal cord injuries. The age of participants shows that 18 to 30-year-olds are one of the highest cohorts, as would be expected, but there are also significant numbers in each age bracket right up to 75. Almost one-third live regionally and 7% live interstate or internationally. So I'm going to give an overview of person-centred care, explain what it is and how and why the LSA's service planning approach supports this model. So what is person-centred care? Basically, it recognises that each person is unique, that it treats each person respectfully as a unique individual with their own life experiences, age, gender, heritage, language and cultural beliefs. It recognises that people are way more than their injury and are acknowledged as the experts in their own lives and the treatment, care and support that they need. Participants are at the centre of planning and making decisions about what is important to them. It involves making shared decisions based on each individual person's circumstances, lifestyles and their values and priorities. It involves seeking out and understanding what is important to participants. It involves establishing strong relationships, fostering trust and establishing mutual respect. It means working together to share decisions and plan treatment, care and support. It also requires individual and flexible service delivery to suit persons' individual needs, preferences, goals and priorities, and to adapt that as their needs change over time. So person-centred planning at the LSA. The LSA uses an internal case management approach where the majority of service planners are allied health professionals, with experience in coordinating treatment, care and support for participants following their serious injuries. Each participant has a service planner or a team of service planners to work with them to develop their plan and to be the contact person for ongoing supports. Service planners build strong relationships with participants so they understand and know what matters to them. It is not possible to provide quality treatment, care and support services that are meaningful and relevant to participants if we don't understand each person's unique circumstances, goals and needs. Service planners also know injury. They know how to work with people following a serious injury. They know what is possible for participants' recovery and independence, and they support participants and their families to work in a coordinated way with providers to reach goals and achieve their best outcomes. Service planners maintain regular contact with participants to understand these ongoing goals. So, service planners work with participants to develop a My Plan. So the first step in developing a My Plan is to know participants and understand what matters to them. The My Plan outlines a person's goals, necessary and reasonable treatment, care and support, and strategies to increase the person's recovery, independence and participation. The service planner will work with the participant to determine what treatment, care and support is best suited to achieving those goals and taking into account their unique needs and preferences. The service planner will also consider the lifetime support scheme rules and necessary and reasonable criteria in planning these treatment, care and support. The service planners need to consider whether a service is necessary and reasonable and will consider the benefit of the service and whether it assists the participant in meeting those individual goals and needs. The appropriateness of the service and the service provider for working towards those goals and for providing supports with someone with that injury type and that specific service that is required. They'll consider cost-effectiveness of the service now and into the future, determining whether investing in funding at this stage will produce longer-term outcomes and results into the future. They'll look at the relationship of the request to the injury sustained in the motor vehicle accident. The service plans will support choice and control for the participant and provide information regarding the best provider options to deliver the services that are most appropriate for the participant. The service planner will check in regularly, review and monitor the participant, and adjust plans to meet changing needs. And this ability to adjust plans is one of the key strengths of the LSA service planning model. For my plans to be truly person-centred, they also need to be dynamic and flexible. We know that people's lives, needs, circumstances can change and sometimes change quite quickly. And we need to be agile enough to respond to these changing circumstances. My plans at the LSA are not fixed, as they often are by other funders, and can be reviewed at any time during your plan period, with the possibility of adjusting funding for services sometimes within 1 or 2 days if it's needed. On the other hand, aged care and NDIS funding is far more static, with annual plans and long administrative processes to review funding or to gain additional funding when it's needed. At the LSA, services can be increased in response to higher needs almost immediately. So, for example, where a participant receives some gratuitous care from their partner, but their partner becomes unwell and is not able to continue to provide that level of care, providers are able to respond immediately to urgent needs, knowing that the LSA will be responsive in amending funding agreements to support this. Equally, if a participant's capacity increases and they achieve greater independence in tasks, then service agreements can be reviewed to provide a step down in allocated supports, enabling participants' recovery and independence and supporting sustainability. So why do we use this approach? Primarily because we know it works. It provides better outcomes for participants and it provides better outcomes for the scheme. And recent research funded by the LSA's grant program and conducted by the University of South Australia examined determinants of quality rehab services following brain injury. And basically, the quality was determined by all the things that we're talking about. It's about building rapport, providing individualised services to meet their unique needs, focusing on meaningful goals with transparent plans to achieve those, regular opportunities for review, and coordinated assistance with participants, families, and providers all working together. This need for person-centred care becomes even more critical when working with participants with complex needs. Further research completed by the University of South Australia regarding the provision of care services for participants with cognitive challenges and really complex needs living in the community also reinforced that model, found person-centred care is a central determinant of effectiveness. It showed that services need to be tailored to personal preferences, goals, challenges and values, that supportive and ongoing relationships and continuity of staff are key in determining effectiveness, that agile service delivery that is responsive to changing needs and adequate funding support that approach. More importantly, what it found is that the risk of not providing person-centred care is that care needs will often escalate, resulting in poor outcomes for participants and increasing cost to the scheme. As 70% of lifetime support scheme participants have sustained a significant brain injury and often have those complex needs related to cognitive challenges in the community, this is highly relevant to the work that we do. Provision of treatment, care and support can be very complex and require high levels of planning, monitoring and review. And it's clear that by using a person-centred approach where service planners know participants, continue to review them and can respond to their changing needs with dynamic and highly responsive plans, the risk of escalating care needs and associated costs is minimised. Oh, sorry. So, in summary, a person-centred, individualised approach to service delivery improves outcomes for participants and for the organisation. It increases the quality and safety of care. It decreases the cost of service provision, and provider and participant satisfaction is improved. With over one-third of participants receiving attendant care support and approximately 80% of LSA's treatment, care and support liability related to attendant care costs, the model that is used to fund these services is vital in supporting person-centred care and improving outcomes for the LSA and for the scheme participants. I'll now hand over to Harris to discuss the attendant care market, the LSA's funding model and the implications for care provision in the community.
Thank you, Sharon. Across Australia, attendant care is funded through several key programs: the NDIS, the aged care system, state-based schemes, lifetime care schemes, federal and state workers' compensation schemes, and the CTP schemes. Of these, the NDIS is by large the largest funder. Between July and December 2024, more than 300,000 participants, around 44% of all active NDIS participants, claimed at least one disability support worker service. Over the same period, there were 136,000 providers providing these services. The NDIS also has a major influence on market pricing. While its rates are officially set as price limits, in practice, they often become the effective market rate. In the second half of 2024, 68% of registered NDIS providers charged exactly at the NDIS price limit, compared with 55% of unregistered providers. This highlights a split: smaller unregistered providers and sole traders with lower overheads may operate below the NDIS limit, but most larger providers who carry greater infrastructure, governance and compliance costs seek to charge at the maximum rate. By contrast, the LSA is a small buyer in this market. The LSA has, as Sharon said, approximately 420 participants. With numbers like these, we just don't exert the same influence and pricing power as the NDIS. Even so, many smaller schemes, including the LSA, set attendant care rates below that of the NDIS. At present, our gazetted rates are approximately 6% lower than that of the NDIS. This isn't unusual. Smaller funders often establish their own rates, whether it's a gazetted schedule, contracts or internal pricing structures. But why are our rates lower? There are multiple reasons. We have different funding models. We have different service delivery approaches and a stronger focus on cost management and scheme sustainability. It also reflects the challenge of accurately capturing real cost of delivery of services across diverse settings. In this presentation, I will explore further how the LSA sets our attendant care rates, why they differ from that of the NDIS, and most importantly, the benefits providers experience when working with us. Our message is that price is only one part of the story. The way we fund, support and partner with providers helps justify our rate structure and helps us build relationships with our providers. For other small funders, the lesson is clear. The key is not simply setting a lower rate, but explaining and demonstrating the value behind it. By highlighting the benefits of working with yourself and your funding model, whether that's flexibility, responsiveness, or administrative support, you can strengthen relationships with providers and maintain sustainability, even in a market dominated by the NDIS. In the next section, I will discuss the LSA funding model, pricing and attendance care cost model. So the LSA has a person-centred planning funding model where the LSA will pay providers directly and participants do not have to manage funds. This is in contrast with the NDIS, where participants can self-manage, use a plan manager or have the NDIS manage funds. There's a high level of participant control and flexibility in choosing providers and managing budgets. However, the review process is much more static, where the LSA has regular and flexible plan reviews, as Sharon has discussed. Under the Motor Vehicle Accident Scheme, Accident Act, the LSA is able to set maximum rates payable for attendant care services. We do just this, and we publish them annually in the Government Gazette. We also set maximum rates for allied health services. Prior to the commencement of the 23-24 financial year, the LSA found itself with gazetted rates that were approximately 13% below that of the NDIS. Panel providers were raising concerns, and there was a growing source of risk to the scheme regarding the delivery of services to our participants. A key cause of this, or the significant of this discrepancy, was a lack of a purposeful and sophisticated approach for determining the LSA rates. For multiple years, the LSA has simply just applied CPI and a limited number of other factors to our rates, which led to a gradually growing discrepancy. In order to address this, the LSA embarked upon a process to establish our own cost model by replicating the NDIS's model and modifying the model to reflect specific LSA circumstances. The model accounts for many factors on the screen here, including the SHADS award, base rates, leave, employee entitlements, penalty loadings, supervision costs, utilisation rates, which includes training, corporate overheads, and any additional loadings that may be set. The model can be updated each year with new inputs and updated assumptions, and provides the LSA with a consistent methodology to setting our rates. Since the introduction of this model, our rates have been between 6 and 7% below that of the NDIS. This has significantly closed the rate differential and reduced the risk of service delivery to our participants. Importantly, this model gives us the ability to factor in the way the LSA works, including our service planning function. Sharon has spoken about the flexibility the LSA provides for and gives us an important tool to discussing rate queries from our providers, so we can sit down with them and discuss how the LSA operates differently. It is, however, important to acknowledge that even at the higher NDIS rate, there are providers in the market that struggle to remain viable or ultimately even exit the market. There are multiple reasons for this: administrative and compliance burden, workforce challenges, cash flow and payment delays, absorbed costs. Therefore, it is crucial that the LSA acknowledges this and addresses these challenges when we promote the benefits of working with the LSA, our funding model, service planning approach, and how these align to our rates. A key element of the LSA's pricing and funding approach is the way that we work with providers. Our goal is not to just fund services fairly, but also create a strong collaborative environment where providers are supported to deliver the best services and outcomes for our participants. Unlike larger, more static systems, the LSA takes a highly accessible and responsive approach to provider engagement. Providers know who to contact within the organisation, whether it's a service planner, accounts payable officer, or a specialist role, and they can expect timely responses. This contrasts with the experience many providers have under the NDIS, where it can be difficult to find the right person to talk to or get a decision within the timeframes that are required. Our service planners play a very important role. They carry out functions that in other schemes, including the NDIS, often falls to the service providers themselves, such as leading case conferences, coordinating input across multiple stakeholders, and driving service planning discussions. This reduces administrative burden on our providers, allowing them to focus on delivering the quality supports to our participants. From a financial perspective, providers benefit from the LSA's dedicated accounts payable team. Operating independently of the government shared services, this team pays invoices on time, reviews them closely for accuracy, and we even alert providers where they've undercharged us. This level of transparency and efficiency strengthens provider confidence in our systems and ensures a fair exchange for services delivered. Equally important is our flexible and agile funding approach. Where participant requirements change, the LSA can adjust funding quickly, sometimes within 24 hours. Providers can therefore be confident that they are resourced for the actual level of support required, without carrying the risk of any shortfalls, providing services for free where participant safety requires it. They don't have to stretch funds across multiple clients, which can occur under less flexible funding models. Additionally, we also extend this principle of responsiveness to areas such as worker training. While our model does attribute a lower base percentage to training than that of the NDIS, this is because we directly fund 100% of additional or specialised training where it is required for that participant. This ensures that participants benefit from a skilled workforce without our providers needing to absorb any additional costs. This also means that our rates do not need to average out training across a group of participants, but instead we only pay for the training that is needed for our participants. Overall, providers working with the LSA experience greater support, responsiveness, and funding flexibility. These factors, combined with our commitment to administrative efficiency and fairness, mean that while our hourly rates may sit below that of the NDIS, providers gain value in other equally important ways. In short, the LSA provider management model is designed to build trust, reduce friction, and enable providers to focus on delivering care.
So the strength of the LSA's pricing and funding framework lies in how it translates our principles of person-centred care into everyday practice and attendant care services. It allows care to be individualised. The model provides funding to support participants to achieve their individual goals, engage in activities that matter to them. It respects individual preferences, with participants actively involved in their care planning, choice and control over providers, preferred support workers, and the timing of the services they receive. It is flexible and responsive to participants' needs, with care plans regularly reviewed to adapt to these evolving needs and goals over time, enabling agile and effective service provision. The care is coordinated. Service plans work in partnership with participants, treating teams, and care providers to support the participants' individual preferences, ensuring they remain at the centre of the care. The LSA coordinates and funds training for support workers by the Treating Allied Health Team to ensure that individual care needs are addressed appropriately. The LSA also provides funding for multiple shadow shifts to allow new members of the care team to learn the individual needs and care plans of that participant and to stabilise the care teams. Investment in this training assists to deliver care tailored to the participant's unique needs. It maintains high standards of quality, it builds and stabilises skilled care teams, and it promotes continuity of care and fosters the long-term relationships that are needed. Care is enabling. Allied health professionals are not only engaged to train care providers, but to provide rehabilitation services for participants to support their recovery. These partnerships facilitate the development of attendant care plans that are specifically aimed at enabling participants, working to increase their independence and progressing achievement of goals. So this approach not only supports the quality of care, but also complements our provider management model. It emphasises accessibility, responsiveness, and fairness. Together, they form a holistic system that values collaboration between participants, providers, and the LSA, and drives sustainable and person-centred outcomes.
The experience of the LSA demonstrates that smaller schemes are not disadvantaged by their size. In fact, they can leverage it to their advantage. While the NDIS and aged care operate at scale with complex national systems and slower responsiveness, smaller schemes can differentiate themselves by being closer, faster, and more collaborative with providers. There are several key lessons here. Use size to create agility and accessibility. Share the load with providers. Build trust through fairness and transparency. Evidence-based cost modelling does matter. And lower rates don't mean less value. Just like to talk briefly about vision for the future. So the LSA's current provider management model thrives on accessibility, responsiveness, and personal engagement. But of course, as participant numbers grow, we need to anticipate the challenges that come with scale. A model built on close relationships and rapid decision-making can become stretched if systems and processes don't evolve alongside demand. The vision for the future is to blend human responsiveness with smart systems and technology. This is not about replacing personal engagement, but about supporting it, ensuring that the core values of flexibility, fairness, and collaboration are preserved as the scheme grows. The guiding principle is that technology should enhance, not dilute, the LSA's relational model. By automating the transactional elements, we can preserve the human-to-human connections, provide as most value, even as scale increases. And that's probably quite relevant to the AI discussion we had earlier today. The future vision is anchored in the LSA's values of partnership and responsiveness, but supported by digital systems that ensure agility and transparency at scale. This way, as participants' numbers grow, the LSA can remain true to its mission. All right, so in conclusion, injury and disability schemes across Australia are facing the same dual challenge: how to remain financially sustainable while also delivering care that is truly individualised. The LSA's pricing framework demonstrates that these two goals do not have to be in conflict. By grounding our model in evidence, building flexibility into funding, and maintaining a strong commitment to person-centred planning, we have created a framework that sustains the scheme while meeting the unique needs of each participant. In closing, the LSA strategy offers more than just a funding framework. It is a vision for how injury schemes can remain sustainable, strengthen provider relationships, and truly deliver individualised care. It is proof that pricing, when designed with transparency and collaboration, is not simply about the cost of care, but about investing in outcomes that last a lifetime. And just before we wrap up, I'd just like to share a quick video of one of our participants talking about his attendant care services. Let's hope this works.
Hi, how you going? I'm Kevin Oldfield. Participant with LSA plus CLO Club. I've got a spinal injury that I've had for 3 years. That's in 2022 that I'm recovering from. I have 24/7 care. I've got a crew of four people that are...
Sorry.
That's all right. We'll skip over that one.
Apologies.
And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I'll encourage you to use the app if you haven't already to ask a question. And, oh, my goodness, we have quite a few. How have providers responded to this funding approach? How do you manage, for example, a new provider that's coming in and sees your rates as 6% below NDIS?
I guess there's two types of providers. So there's providers currently on our panel and there's new providers, as you've mentioned. We do have mixed success with new providers. Sometimes we are forced to use the NDIS rates, particularly if it's a remote or regional location. But we have had some success, particularly smaller providers. And I think it goes back to what I discussed, that we know that smaller providers with lower overheads are often actually happy to accept lower rates, and that is often the case. Larger, more established providers will often push for the NDIS rates. With our panel providers, they all accept our rates. We don't publish or publicly state that we use this model, but where we get queries or concerns raised about our rates, we will meet in person with our providers to discuss why we fund the way we fund. And often the question will be put to them, what do you see the benefits of working with the LSA? Or what do you think the benefits of working with the LSA are? And many of the things that we discussed during this presentation will come out, and very quickly the concerns about the rates will disappear, and they will understand why we fund what we fund and why our rates are the way they are. So, but I think it's important having that face-to-face discussion with them. This isn't something that is done by email correspondence. We will meet with our providers to explain why we fund the way we fund. A challenge for us will be next year we'll be going out to market for a new attendant care panel. We will be dealing with many providers who perhaps haven't worked with the LSA before. How can we, as part of that process, promote the benefits of working with the LSA? What we don't want is providers going, oh, they fund 6% less, we're not going to respond to this tender. We want them to see, oh, they have an in-house accounts payable team. Oh, they pay really quickly. They have these service planners we can contact, and the other benefits. So hopefully that goes well, but we'll find out soon.
Thank you. Okay. Have you got a sense of if the quality of providers have changed with your changes in the funding model? So either better or worse, do you think that the funding model is influencing which providers are coming forward?
Our attendant care panel has remained static for quite some time, so we haven't had that change in providers.
Okay. There's some interest in how you invest in training. Can you talk a little bit to how does the investment in training work? Do you just invest initially in new care workers as they come in, or is there an ongoing kind of training component?
Sure. Both, really. So the LSA can provide training for support workers that is specifically related to that participant's needs. So it's not general training. It is about what that participant needs. We will often work really closely prior to discharge, for example, with the treating teams and arrange for care providers to go into the hospital and be trained by the allied health professionals in the hospital so that we already have built a skilled team by the time somebody is discharged to the community. But in the longer term, of course, care teams aren't always stable. New people will come on or participants' needs will change, and we will look at providing that ongoing training in the community as well. And as I said, we'll also do shadow shifts, which is often the main target, I guess, for new staff coming in to provide care. So they are familiar with the person, they work alongside another support worker until they understand their routine, and then the allied health professionals can also provide training to support that.
Do you have a sense of your participants and whether or not most of your participants use relatively large shifts, and so it's kind of more economical for providers to fill that shift, or if you've got participants with very small shifts, kind of more like the NDIS profile?
Sure. The majority of care packages at the LSA are quite large, generally speaking. We have participants with really complex needs in the community, and the care packages might often be 24/7, sometimes more than one worker. So they are quite significant packages. We occasionally have small packages for some of the more of the domestic support, community participation, but generally speaking, most participants receive quite large care packages. What that means for providers is that the things that we're talking about are of even more value. They're not particularly of value for someone who's only receiving a service once or twice a week, but for those participants that are receiving really complex care, all the things around training, shadow shifts, working with service planners, having agile plans and flexible service delivery is really key to sustaining those packages.
Now, this is a rather large question, so you may or may not have a view, but do you think the NDIS can learn from your approach, or is it only suitable for smaller schemes? Others in the room might have a view. You're welcome to jump on the mic. You don't have to.
I would certainly suggest about outcomes for participants and what it means for provision of treatment, care and support in the community, that having a model that has a person-centred approach and has service planners that are highly skilled, accessible, continuing to work with participants and having plans that allow the outcomes of that work to be embedded in the practice in the community will absolutely produce better outcomes.
And do you have participants that might request to work with an off-panel care provider, and do you have a mechanism or a process for onboarding those providers?
We do sometimes have requests for off-panel service provision. That's mainly related to accommodation services. Some of our participants receive SDA services, so supported disability accommodation services, and often that comes as a package with a care provider. So we need to engage that care provider to be able to access that accommodation. So that is the main time that we might go off panel. We also will do it potentially for people that live remotely, where there's limited service providers available, so we need to engage whichever provider can provide that package.
Thank you. We got the bell, which is 5 minutes, so I'll ask one final question. There are several here that we haven't got to, so I'm sure Sharon and Harris would be happy to chat with you afterwards if your question wasn't tackled. But are you able to talk a little bit to how you measure outcomes under your person-centred approach? So how do you kind of get confidence that you're achieving the outcomes that individuals are aiming for?
I think we do that in a few different ways. We certainly speak to participants a lot. We have an annual participant survey that looks at how they rate the services and how comfortable they're feeling with the services that they're being provided with. We also work really closely with the allied health treating teams. So as part of the reporting that we request from allied health professionals, they need to complete clinical outcome measures to show whether a participant is progressing and what that looks like. So we gain a whole lot of information from that as well. So we have various tools, I think, that we use to look at outcomes and to ensure that works.
Thank you. Join me in thanking Sharon and Harris.